This is session number 49, recorded on August 13, 2007, side A, and we're doing the second chart that Bob Marshall made. Originally it was called Top-Down Identity-Power Bureaucracy, and in brackets, in the West. So it's Top-Down Identity, Power Bureaucracy in the West. You can see an image of it on our site here at Fatty Communion, or you can go to fivebody.com and go into the chart and image archive and click on top-down chart to see what we're looking at. Now, if you notice, looking at it, you'll see it's the same basic structure as a bottom-up chart, where you have ground on the far left, and then the figures, which are the effects of the ground. He has the same situation on the far left, a vertical global village and a vertical global theater, global village for the first four levels and global theater for the second four levels. And it begins underground it says secret government, and then under figures it has three columns, popular government, technological government, and the third column, symptoms. Not as many columns under figures as the bottom up, but basically the same idea that the figures are effects of the ground. Now, in dealing with the top-down identity, Bob Marshall meant that humans and their power structures were the ground, not the technology. So this is a contrary view to history. You could say that it is the LaRouchean view, and not strictly LaRouchean, that's Lynn LaRouche or Mae Brussel, but the idea that history is not necessarily a conspiracy, but that the people who pull the strings are pretty secretive. So that's why Bob Marshall calls it secret government. So you have anything to say, Scott, before I go on?
No, I think we covered the first part pretty comprehensive. We're ready to move on.
First part of what?
The bottom-up identity.
Okay, right, no lingering points there. Okay, so what you have here, the first secret government, Bob Marshall has Illuminati around 30 AD, which is, I guess, 3 years before Jesus Christ gets crucified. So the Illuminati are there, and it's some kind of...
Did you say before he gets crucified or after?
Yeah, he gets crucified at the age of 33, so...
Oh, that's right.
You know, so this is the beginning of a three-year mission.
Right.
So under figures, the first column says popular government in brackets front. That means that the secret government is propping up a more obvious form of top-down control called a front. And they need a technological medium to have their power. So that's the next column, technological government. And then the symptoms of that combination of the popular government, the technological government, and the secret government. So that's pretty straightforward. Now, I think he's not talking about Babylonian or Mesopotamian, Egyptian secret governments. It's beginning at the time of the Roman Empire. And that may be when you could have a secret government, because it's the management of the technology, the coinage, other means of authority that is a create situation where a front covers up the secret power.
Mm-hmm.
So the technological government is spoken word. Now that's the figure. So what is the hidden ground? Well, looking back at the bottom-up chart, we have here the hidden ground is the phonetic alphabet and papyrus. So even though that begins at the time of Plato and Aristotle, 400 years before the top-down dating of 30 AD, it has, the Greeks weren't able to maintain their control. The Alexandrian Empire kind of collapsed. in what's known as the Hellenic period, H-E-L-L-E-N-I-C. But Rome was able to consolidate through roads and paper a structure that was permanent for 400 years, approximately. So the technological government is a spoken word, but the secret government was the medium of papyrus and roads. And the people that understood that or just imposed that. So the previous technology of government, spoken word, is now a figure. In the pre-literate forms of government, spoken word was the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the charisma of being a tribal chieftain was the figure. The tribal chieftain's charisma via the spoken word. And you could say skills in war, health, food. I mean, way back is the situation where different persons in the tribe would be skillful in different things, and they would be the rulers during that activity. But once you start getting to writing, it becomes a little more bureaucratized. But it'd still be a spoken word as the ground. But when you get into the phonetic alphabet and papyrus, then the hidden ground is that fact, and the spoken word becomes the figure.
Mm-hmm.
So the symptoms of that situation, a historical cliche image, stereotypical image, say, is the slaughter of Christians. That is the fact that Bob Marshall highlights. Now, he does that because the phonetic alphabet is going to give power to the Christians over the next 200 years, because at the collapse of the Roman Empire, they're the only ones who are literate enough to keep it going, and they become the administrators. And Constantine recognized that and made them the official religion, because at that time there was all kinds of cults and different kinds of pagan religions and forms of worship and secret cults that were competing for being the official religion of Rome. So the slaughter of Christians is what starts shortly after 30 AD, but within a couple of hundred years, Christians may be slaughtering other people.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the Roman Empire, what was left of it.
Well, how fast did Christians, the Christian sects, grow around Jesus? There weren't Christians before Jesus, right?
No, they came in with Jesus. Peter and Paul started organizing it, and Paul was more of an external missionary than the Peter zone. Peter kept it within their tribe, but Constantine makes Christianity the official Roman religion around 340, 330, something like that, A.D. So the Christians, they're relatively unknown for 120 years.
Right. So when you refer to the slaughter of the Christians, you're talking about a little later on.
The slaughter is 70, 60, 50, shortly after Christ dies.
Oh, they're multiplying pretty fast if there's enough of them to slaughter.
Yeah, there's a few of them. Apparently they hung out in the catacombs of Rome, the sewer zones underneath the city, apparently.
Oh.
So they were pretty secretive for a period, and that's when they were being slaughtered, I assume. I don't have the exact dates, but in my cliche images of it.
Yeah, we hear about the Romans feeding the Christians to the lions in the Colosseum. So that's part of that.
And I don't know if they did that while he was alive. He's only a 3 years missionary. I don't think they do it till after he's been crucified.
Yeah.
Because they were just a small sect, so to speak. But as time went on, they started to become a little more prominent as they proselytized and got converts. That's maybe when the Romans started to slaughter them, and I don't think that was too long after Christ died,
mm-hmm.
or Christ was crucified, we'll say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. just on the side, I don't know if this is historically accurate, but I heard one person's theory that when Constantine made Christianity official, it wasn't so much because he thought Christianity was so great, it's just that the Jews were getting certain power against the empire that he didn't like, and he wanted leverage against them, so he hoiked up a new, you know, Christianity and made it official as a way of getting leverage against the certain Jewish factions that he didn't like.
Well, maybe that's true. I don't know. I'm just going by the general principle that they were efficient, literate administrators, and as the rest of the population maintained the illiterate state, the Roman bureaucracy had built up a point and was being threatened and needed capable people to carry it on.
Mm-hmm. So early on you mentioned the coinage around the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
How far, do you know how far coinage goes back?
In my mind, it's 700 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
In known history, I think it's about 700 when it starts.
And they start minting coins, and that puts a little spin on the whole barter scene, I guess.
Yeah, that's the beginning of visual space, complementing writing,
mm-hmm.
and leading into the phonetic alphabet effect.
Right. And
okay,
so
now he has here, why global village at the time of Rome? Well, Rome was a huge horizontal empire, huge. No culture had ever experienced that in recorded history before, and it spread out over, a large part of the Mediterranean area. And
And this is because they have the papyrus, and he can write the rulers can write down commands and send them on horseback out to their generals, and it's a way of communicating over larger distances. And then they start creating roads, and this is why Rome starts kind of spreading out geographically, as opposed to, like you say, Egypt, which was time-bound.
Yeah, it's very efficient. This is what Harold Innes calls a space-bound, not time-bound, space-bound. You could say that time-bound is oral, and space-bound is visual.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for that time, it was a global village. In that part of the world, it was a huge, huge village. All right? So I think that's why Bob Marshall begins at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And but he then jumps to 1500 with the Venice power structure. Secret government is Venice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Illuminati, he put that in as provocative, like putting in Second Coming in the bottom-up chart. And he has Second Coming in this chart. Illuminati resonates with all kinds of images. Were they ETs? Were they a secret cult going way back from Egypt? You know, who were they? That's what Bob Marshall's getting at there. They're very secret, and there may be more to discover about who did run the Roman Empire behind the scenes.
Yeah. I haven't read Cosmic Trigger, but when Robert Anton Wilson talks about the Illuminati, does he push it back that far? Do you know?
I can't remember. I don't know. I haven't read that book in 30 years, so
right.
Maybe you might.
Okay.
Because doesn't he talk about Sirius and ETs and things? I don't know. Sitchin's books weren't out by then, were they? Don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. I don't want to get distracted.
Yeah. Okay, so what you have at the time of Venice, 1500, it's the Holy Roman Empire still happening, and or at least the House of Habsburg, which is the front trying to maintain the Holy Roman Empire, and the technological government is manuscript. So manuscript is the figure of government, and the content is not, it is the time of the printing press, but Bob Marshall's saying it's not necessarily the printing press that is the whole part of power, it's actual individuals controlling how the printing press is used, and that the content of the printing press is important. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And He's got the House of Habsburg as figure, implying that Habsburg was possibly the Illuminati that's being referred to as the ground in step number one.
Well, LaRouche emphasizes Venice as a secret government in this period. They were, like, very powerful for 200 or 300 years, maybe even back to 1100, according to LaRouche's scholarship, and I think that's what Bob Marshall was using. In some ways, this is him working out the LaRouche and Mae Brussels kind of information as complementary, C-O-M-P-L-E-M-E-N-T-A-R-Y, like a yin-yang, knowing that form doesn't totally run the show and knowing that content doesn't run the show. So the two charts, top-down and bottom-up, have a yin-yang relationship. So they go hand-in-hand, glove-in-hand. So he's thinking in terms of LaRouche's historical documentation. And this is just before the printing press. I mean, the Protestant Revolution, Protestant Reformation, 1517, Martin Luther starts it. So the Catholic Church is still unified, still running the show, and House of Habsburg is the most prominent empire at that time, and they are controlled by the financial secrecy of the Venice oligarchs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so with the printing press coming in, it's really helping them to get organized in a new, organized power structure in a new way.
Right. So the House of Habsburg supports, I think it's Charles V around this time, is the major Spanish king in Spain. And you have the Inquisition happening, and you have the Spanish Armada, which is very powerful, and it attacks England around 1590 or so, somewhere in there, 1599 maybe. And that, and the Armada loses. The British Admiralty wins that battle, and that's the beginning of the Protestant Empire coming into Britain, which you see in the next section. And the technological government is to print a book.
Mm-hmm.
So the technological government is a previous technology. Not necessarily. He's got here manuscript, technological government's manuscript. Before the, no, that's right. The printing press starts in 1450, so it's starting to be a hidden ground, the printing press from 1450 to 1500. And so manuscript is the rearview mirror. And that's the, all the people see, and the oligarchy has to use the medium that is most prominent, the most visible.
Mm-hmm.
But the Venice oligarch are going to be upset by what's sneaking up on them, which is a printed book. But by the time you get to the third level, which is the time of Napoleon and the invention of the railway, and it's 1840 according to this chart, this is the family trust, which sort of comes out of Venice. Some of the families move from Venice to London via Amsterdam in the 1600s, and then they get very powerful in London in the 1700s and into the 1800s, and they're using the printed book for their technological government. But what's sneaking up on the world is the newspaper, and soon the telegraph, and also the beginning of the Industrial Revolution with the railway.
Let me ask you a question about that. Just before we, and then, but first, just before we move completely off number two, can we say that the printing press coming in Venice, well, where was the printing press invented? Wasn't it?
In Germany. By a guy named Gutenberg.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, okay, in Germany. And then, but they're getting it in, apparently its effects are beginning to organize Venice in 1500.
Yeah, there's a statistic now, like there's about a, I don't know, half a million books published by 1500.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they really.
What year was the printing press invented?
1450, approximately.
Oh, okay. So it's becoming the hidden ground in Venice in step number two. Now, we can say that because...
No, the hidden ground in the rest of Europe, almost. Venice is... remember, the Catholic Church is going to struggle for the next 100 years to catch up.
Oh, okay.
And it's called the Counter-Reformation, which they get going, I think, about 1550.
Mm-hmm.
And they form the Jesuits as a new political militant part of the power structure of the Roman Catholic Church to counter the power that's coming out of the Protestant countries, Germany and the United States, and England. But Germany is not a unified country yet, you know, and so the oligarchs that move to London have the advantage of being off the continent, and they kind of use England as a fulcrum point to move out across the Atlantic Ocean, and also to start controlling Europe.
And so is the so in step number two, is the manuscript being affected by the fact that the printing press is coming in Germany and other parts of Europe?
Yeah.
Okay. So and
you know what happens to the manuscript? The manuscript is basically just in the churches and in the monasteries.
Mm-hmm.
The average peasant doesn't have any experience of the manuscript. But the printed book is the first time the peasant can read the Bible.
Yeah. But
so
the
democratic impulse is a result of that.
Right. But a new technology sort of mutates the old technology. So the manuscript's being sort of mutated in some way by the fact that the new printing press is, and the book is coming, is being, is ingressing into the hidden ground.
Yeah.
And so then could we say that this is what, like we say that when the new technology mutates the old technology, it creates a kind of warfare. So could we say that the fact that the book is becoming the hidden ground, it's threatening or mutating the manuscript, and this is what caused the Spanish Inquisition / Armada.
Yeah. The manuscript is the medium for the Catholic Church. The printed book is the new ground, new medium for the Protestant Church, formed in the 1500s. And so there's a battle between, by the end of the century, 1590s, the Protestant Empire coming out of England, with those famous sailors, Sir Walter Raleigh and those kind of people, Sir Francis Drake, you ever heard of those names?
Sure.
They're becoming more and more powerful, so the Vatican has to send in its team, which is the House of Habsburg, based strongly in Spain, even though Habsburg is Austria, but they have a Habsburg relative running Spain. And that's the last stand of the Catholic manuscript culture via the Spanish Inquisition, and they lose.
Mm-hmm. And then in step three, the Fondo begins to displace the House of Habsburg as the new power structure?
Yeah, remember, House of Habsburg is Catholic, so you have Britain as the figure, and the people behind it. Britain is an industrial country by 1840, and it's almost a democracy, and as we think of democracy, and as McLuhan would say, they had hardware communism. The average peasant could read newspapers, travel on railways, coaches. There was all kinds of services that, like, no rich person could own and control just for themselves.
Yeah.
So there's more new community services.
Right.
And that's after the Enlightenment in the 1700s. So you've got this...
And the telegraph is pretty well established by 1840.
No, it's 1844, 1850.
Okay, so it's not
quite... The first telegraph was 1844.
Okay.
But yeah, it's lurking in there. So the beginning of a mass society is happening in 1840. It sort of covers up that the historical banking families who controlled the central banks of Europe, what we call the Fondo, that's pure. Fondi is plural for individual fondo, right? So family trust, not family trusts. Bob Marshall has there in brackets family trust, fondo. Plural is fondi.
Mm-hmm.
Many family trusts. So they are running the show behind the scenes, at least on the banking, but they're slightly sidelined because you have these hardware communist service environments that people. Are using collectively forms of wealth that aren't just controlled by money wealth.
Right, so they can't control, they can't orchestrate everything anymore because the collective people using the this new communistic environment are collectively...
new mobility.
Yeah, and they're collectively organizing the new scene.
Yes, now there's still at that time heavy banking control. I forget his name, it might have been Disraeli, the British Prime Minister, said the people who run the show, the secret forces behind the scenes, the average person has no knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
It's a famous quote he gave, I can't remember, but something like that.
Right.
He was a prime minister. And so there still is a visual culture. Banking is very important, and private money is very important. It doesn't collapse till 1929, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
well, even today you hear people talk about the whatever, the conspiratorial people,
yeah,
talk about the 14 families that run the world or have all 99% of the wealth of the planet in their
the bankers,
pockets,
yeah,
or the bankers. And so that's, so is that still true today, or is that just a lingering idea as an effect because of the Fondo?
It's a lingering idea. Not completely true anymore. But we'll do that when we get to my chart.
Sure.
And now, what's interesting is, just to carry on this point here, the fourth level.
Well, what causes Napoleon, the Railway War, World War One, decentralized monarchies? What is the effect on that's breaking up or threatening or mutating the printed book, which is causing this symptom?
Yeah, just before we go into that, I just wanted to say, you have the Fondo in level 3, 1840, and then what's the secret government's world? It's a League of Nations, in brackets, 1918. Well, it gets created after 1918, at the end of World War One. That's a big collective secret government. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a family trust.
Yeah.
So it's more collectivized by the next century. So I just wanted to say that. Now, back to level three, Napoleon / Railway War / World War One and decentralized monarchies. The monarchies were the fronts for the... Fondi, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 1840, Britain, that's the beginning of Queen Victoria's era. So London, the Fondi are using the British monarchy to control the British Empire. But because of this hardware communism and these industrialized services that are allowing the middle classes and lower classes to have mobility, the monarchies are weakened. So you decentralize them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bob Marshall means decentralized. It's not, they're still there, but they don't have a huge octopus-like centralizing power.
Well, it's right there in the symptom. It's the railroad is beginning to decentralize, probably.
And well, it decentralizes power, but it centralizes into cities. Major cities that we have by the turn of the 19th into the 20th century are caused and created by the railway. That's where you centralize the market, and products are brought in from all over the world to a central point.
Yeah.
And then a huge cities. That's the ghettos and industrial slums of the 19th century.
Yeah, you get the hubs.
Yeah, and that's a product of the railway and the steamship. So the monarchies are no longer the... Fondi's still are running things behind the banking structures and are involved with the monarchies as around Europe as fronts, but they're getting weakened. And they still have the power, but they're on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you get to the next level, the world government, which is the secret part, you have decentralized Western empires. That's the breaking up of a East and West into Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin, all kinds of little tin pot dictators all over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in previous phases it was Britain or the House of Habsburg, or way back, Rome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if we look at level four and then we go back to the bottom-up identity, we can see that the electronic revolution is the new sort of technological ground during this period.
Yeah, the electronic revolution is that period, from the telegraph up to 1945. It's the electric revolution at that point.
The electric revolution, yeah.
Yeah. And, okay, so the...
And America becomes the figure.
Yeah, America, I mean, at the end of World War One, lots of people, you know, in pretty dire straits in Europe, which has been devastated by World War One, a lot of movement, masses going around the world, and a lot of them head to America. And America becomes the beacon of liberty and opportunity. The streets will be paved with gold. They all come. They were coming in the 1900s and the 1910s, but they really start flooding into New York City in that, and moving out west after World War One. So America is the figure of... No, remember, this is called popular government. So the popular government, which is the front for the secret government, back at the time of Christ, people thought Rome was the government.
Mm-hmm.
Just the whole structure that it was, and if you were a Roman, you were part of it. You felt superior. And then you have the Catholic Empire 1,500 years later, and if you were a Catholic, you were celebrating the House of Habsburg. But it's no longer an oligarchy house by the time of 1840. It's a country, because nationalism has come in. All right? So nationalism is a big force after the American Revolution, 1776, and then the French Revolution, 1789. So now you have this consolidation of power after Napoleon in the 1840s around Britain.
Yeah.
That's because Napoleon lost. And so the British and those who identify with the British Empire say that's their government. It represents them. Now, for the popular mood, those that feel that they're part of a class, that is the people, America becomes the popular government, popular image, the front. There's still, as this chart is showing, there's still a secret power bureaucracy in the West, and that's the secret government column, and it's behind America is the world government that's set up as the League of Nations, the first version of the United Nations we have today. And that is set up by the Fondi, which came from Venice, which some people say came from the Illuminati. So it's still the same forces that are running the world behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But technology creates a very involving form of popular government.
Mm-hmm.
From the printing press on.
Yeah. And between 1850 and 1918, the telegraph has really had time to come in and mutate the book and break it into the multiple points of view of the newspaper.
Yeah, and it mutates the newspaper, too, because the newspaper was very literate, very detailed before the telegraph.
How far back does the newspaper go before the telegraph?
I think it goes back to Addison and Steele, who started the Spectator about 1720s or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're like newsletters,
right,
at the beginning.
Yeah.
And that happens early part of the 18th century or the 1700s.
Yeah. And so that's during the book period when the book represents the point of view and really consolidates the point of view, probably as a method of communication within the newspaper medium.
Yeah. And then the newspapers exploded by the telegraph, and that's where you start having a flood of information and multiple international perspectives of information flooding the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Multiple points of view.
Yeah. So now the technology government is again the previous form. So it's the same, they're the same terms in the bottom-up chart as the top-down chart.
Mm-hmm.
So in the bottom-up, you have spoken word for the papyrus period, and manuscript for the print period, and printed book for the Industrial Revolution period, and newspaper for electronic revolution. Now, the ground, then, is the more recent technology, not the technological government. But Bob Marshall's saying here that the ground is not so much the hidden technology. It's there as a factor, but it's what people do with it, how they use it.
Mm-hmm.
This is contrary to the McLuhan view.
Yeah, he's not looking at the hidden ground here, is he? He's looking at the...
Who is it?
Well, Bob Marshall and the top-down identity.
Oh, he's looking at the hidden ground. That's
well, the
ground.
Spoken word, manuscript, book, and newspaper are all figures in each of these periods.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's not referencing the hidden ground too much.
Yes, he is. He's saying that the hidden ground is not the technology. It's the people.
Oh, okay.
The secret team.
Right, the secret government. That is the hidden ground.
It's the idea that humans determine the ground.
Yeah.
Bureaucratically, rather than technology creating a ground effect that the power elites have to adapt to.
Right.
I think what Ballmer's trying to show here is that the secret government stays in power for 2,000 years.
Yeah. And the popular people who are looking for the conspiratorial power behind the scene, they're all focused on the secret government. Nobody's really focused on the hidden ground until we get to, until McLuhan starts talking about it.
Yeah, the hidden technological ground.
Yeah, the hidden technological
ground. Well, McLuhan, you know, consolidated the knowledge breakthroughs of Wyndham Lewis, James Joyce, Ezra Pound, T.S. Eliot, and other people, but mainly the vortices. They had the advantage of being in Britain, which was the PowerPoint 100 years ago, and so they could see that something new was happening, and it was affecting traditional political power.
Yeah. So between before Wyndham Lewis and in the first part of the 20th century, nobody could have even conceptualized the bottom-up identity chart, and the. And you know, thought and noticed the effects of the hidden ground technology.
Yeah, McLuhan says that the 20th century is so filled with rapid change of technological environment, we gradually could start to see, inevitably, naturally, that oh, there's some changes going on here, and I think we can see what's causing it.
Hmm.
Now it's a total cliche. Everybody knows that new technology alters everybody. They really. Experience of the last 20 years because
mm-hmm.
it's so much of it and it's so different, the digital stuff, that it just upsets all former structures, and now people aren't even sure where they want to have a family as a core institution.
Mm-hmm.
The nuclear family, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's going pretty radical compared to most of history.
Right. So the symptom here on level
and
four.
And people's lives are so upset so quickly by the digital media that you're going to notice that that's what caused it.
Yeah.
Okay, what were you saying?
Well, the symptom on level number four, Hitler, Stalin, radio war, World War II, decentralized Western empires. Well, we don't have radio by 1918, do we? The radio doesn't come in until the late 20s.
No, 1922.
1922.
Yeah, it's not huge, but he's tying it up to the dates of the secret governments. I mean, the world government, the League of Nations is starting in 1918, 1919.
And they're using radio, maybe radio, some form of radio.
The first use of radio, I think, was 1916 by the Irish rebels who. Used ship-to-shore broadcasting or something. They used a radio. No one. It was more like people thought the radio was like telegraph, point to point.
Yeah, it's just an upgrade of the telegraph in the beginning.
No, that's how it's perceived. But the Irish rebels in 1916, they just sent out an SOS to everybody. It's called the fusion broadcasting.
Oh.
And so they didn't think of going point to point. They just sent out all over the place
mm-hmm.
to see who would respond, and that was kind of a new perception.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's 1916, but the doesn't become environment till the 20s. So the point is that you have in the Fondo Zone decentralized monarchies. Monarchies were the power before, so they're going to be broken up. So what happens in the fourth level during the League of Nations? Western empires, French, German, Russian, British, they get broken up into a world government. Secret world government, and the image of charisma and glamour goes to one country, America, and then that allows America to start building its empire in the 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Western empires, traditional ones, are broken up, and a new one comes out of America.
Right. And his League of Nations, which is dated 1918, then you go to symptoms, Hitler and World War II and so on. Well, that's not until, you know, the 1940s. So the symptoms here are spanning the period from 1918 to 1945.
Yes, and the world, but the world government, the secret team in the world government, the League of Nations, they are going to have a period to do their machinations, and they've got to deal with the Communist Revolution, which is a bottom-up effect. Okay, so they're going to play Hitler off Stalin, and radio will be the medium that they broadcast the propaganda on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it begins in 1918, but it spans a period.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big chunk of time.
Right.
And part of the maneuverings of the world government, as George Orwell spells out in 1984, the three sections of the globe, that is like what the view is from the League of Nations.
Mm-hmm.
Or the people controlling the League of Nations.
Right.
They're orchestrating three major regions around the world, and one of them is the Stalin region, another part is Hitler, and then there's America. Those are juggling for oil in the Middle East, juggling for power in the rest of the world, what's known as the Third World, and so it's a real period of turmoil. And then there's the mafias coming up in the cities.
Right. Yeah. So, I wasn't paying close attention, so it's worth noting at this point that the symptoms span the interval between Level 1 and Level 2 Illuminati in Venice, and then Level 2 and Level 3 Venice and Fondo, and then Level 3 and Level 4 Fondo and World League.
Not necessarily. I mean, the slaughter of Christians, that only goes on for, you know, 50 years or whatever.
But it doesn't necessarily begin in 30 AD. We already established
right.
It begins a little later than that, but it doesn't go up to 1500.
But now Spanish Inquisition, didn't they start that after the Crusades in the 1200s with the Albigensian Crusade? So Spanish Inquisition, there's several of them, and
mm-hmm.
they do span a period of time,
right,
over a couple hundred years, I guess. But there was a Spanish Inquisition. Second or third or fourth one around the time of Venice.
Right.
And the Armada is a particular year. So, yeah.
And then World War One, of course, doesn't happen until the early 20th century. So that doesn't happen. That doesn't begin in 1840. That begins closer to 1918.
Right. And so, yeah, the bureaucracies can span longer stretches of time, and they're not as affected by world events.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they aren't upset immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Fondo are coming from 350 years from Venice to 1840.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a stretch of period, and times are slower back then.
Right.
Change is slower. It's just that Napoleon, he's a symptom because he's going to bring in state education and hospitals, and that's a printed book as content of power.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
He's going to bring in these old media as means of creating popular government.
Mm-hmm.
So in the time of Hitler and Stalin and the radio war, the figure is the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Technological government is the newspaper. And it's like, the newspaper is where serious issues are discussed in the parliaments and governments in Europe, and radio sneaking up on everybody is going to have an unforeseen effect.
We can probably assume there's already censorship going on back at the news, you know, in the newspaper at this time.
Oh yeah, no, there was censorship. I mean that.
Yeah.
They may not even be considered censorship back then. Just a correct way of writing, reading, and presenting your opinions.
Yeah, but the Fondo had their secrets they didn't want in the newspapers, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
What happens to the Fondo during... Now, how does the Fondo family trust... Do they spin off from royal families, or are they just industrious... you know, enterprising people who amass the fortunes for themselves, or?
Well, the kings and queens, they would rely on the banks for their own economies, and the bankers controlled the funds that the royalty would use. It would be under the cover of being part of the King's Highway or the people's money. But the Fondi were the accounts themselves, not the people, the lawyers, the organizing of the books, which would go on for centuries.
Right.
So it was the visual space structure that is the definition of a Fondi.
But that began with the Knights Templars probably long
before. Yeah, but they collapsed and they didn't have the printing press to consolidate.
Yeah.
And they may have come back. Some people think they came back. There's a Knight of Malta in that in various phases. But I did a whole hour on this with Ted Lohman in Tucson, Arizona, back in 99. I did an hour on the phases of the Illuminati and went into the legends of the Knights Templars and how they were taking advantage of pre-printed press improved visual space technology, say in 1200, 1300, around the Crusades, but they couldn't hold it, and the Black Death wiped them out in 1348.
Mm-hmm.
And they historically were wiped out in, what, 1307 or so, but they couldn't build a huge visual printed book empire that comes in with Britain.
Yeah. Plus, they become more wealthy than the king, and he goes after them, too.
Yeah. So the... So you have the Fondi in 1840s, but World War One weakened the Fondi, and they got beat up bad. They funded and tried to make World War One work for them, but it was a collective disaster that fooled the Fondi in terms of what new technology would do.
Right.
And new weaponry in that in the First World War. So they're weakened. So you have a movement into a League of Nations.
Which is a group of people, including the President of the United States, plus various, plus prime ministers from Europe, plus dictators from different countries, or...
Yeah, Woodrow Wilson is the American president at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very influential, and he can be influential because America's sitting pretty after World War One.
Mm-hmm.
So they can lobby the American power structure into the League of Nations.
Right. And that brings us up to 1918, which is before the big stock market crash and the New Deal and all that.
Yeah, that's going to be in, we'll get move in transition to the next four levels of the global theater. How are we for time?
Let's wrap this up for the Global Village, and then after the break we'll begin the global theater part of the top-down identity.
Yeah, now remember, this is Bob Marshall's work. It's rather simple, but he's trying to work out what he can put together in terms of what LaRouche is saying and whatever other sources of top-down power, and have it as a parallel yin-yang to the bottom-up via McLuhan.
Yeah, and this is a stepping stone, really, to Bob's formula chart and then Bob's tiny note chart.
Yeah.
Because the slope only becomes asymptotically steeper as we move into those charts.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
they get more complex.
More complex, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it for this session. Hit stop.